Kath McAloon is here with us for a wrap of the week's big stories. And Kath, I guess unsurprisingly, the weather in Queensland and New South Wales, it's what's making most of the headlines this week.
A week on from Cyclone Debbie, and this past week was really all about the cleanup getting well underway. And as you mentioned, we're starting to get a bit of an idea of just how much damage there's been to farm crops. That picture is getting a little clearer, but it's still not sort of definitive. In cyclone hit North Queensland, there was the arduous task this week of cleaning up. And for farmers, that meant a lot of repairing of fences to be done as they got onto their properties and had a look at just sort of how bad it had been. It was a week before grazier Ralph Cox, who has cattle near Proserpine, could get onto some of his paddocks, and he was able to find most of his cattle. But he says that it will take him sort of 6 months before he can fix up all the 50 kilometres of internal fencing that he says needs attention on his property. So he's just sort of one example of the sort of situation that farmers face. Many farms this week were without power, they were without phones. Insurance assessors started to get into the region to look at just what sort of damage there was to particularly the sugarcane crops. And Glenn Clark is the chairman of the Proserpine Cane Growers. He says government assistance will be critical for months to come.
We're not too sure on the quantified losses, but there will be a loss. We've got halves operators who are going to be down on tonnage. We've got growers who will be down on tonnage. Of course, that means income streams as well. So, yeah, any assistance we can possibly access, we'll be trying to access for our members.
I guess in my ignorance, Kath, I didn't think too much about what would be happening off the mainland, and there have been stories popping up about the impact this will have on fisheries in particular.
Yeah, you tend to think of what's happening on the land, but out at sea it's had a big impact on fisheries, and it's kind of been pretty bad timing, you would think, for the prawn industry because, of course, we're coming up to Easter, which is sort of their biggest time of year for trading and for seafood in general. They tend to sell a lot of seafood around Easter, but prawns are a real favourite. It's too early to estimate what those losses will be, and Queensland fishermen, particularly in that northern region, they're optimistic that their supply won't be affected too much for this traditionally busy Easter period. Matt West is from Australian Prawn Farms, which is south of Mackay. He expects that they'll move 70 tonnes of prawns onto the southern market within 2 weeks. He's watching the flooding threat at Rockhampton closely to see what happens there.
We're looking at that every day, every hour, liaising with the trucking companies to make sure that there's ways around. And, at this stage, fingers crossed, it's looking okay. We'll move heaven and earth to get people our prawns, that's for sure. So if they need to go inland to get them down south, then they'll need to go inland.
It's nightmarish logistics, I guess, to deal with.
Exactly, all the roads that have been blocked off.
Yeah, which you wouldn't automatically think of. Before we head further south to the north coast in New South Wales, floods, I think you've got some good news for me. What happened?
There was some nice news that came out of the terrible situation up in North Queensland. This is of new life emerging near Mackay. So at Freckle Farm at Eaton, Deb McLucas welcomed a new calf after the cyclone.
Our cattle actually spent the cyclone across the creek and we weren't able to get to them. We found that one of my milking heifers calved. It looks like she probably calved on Wednesday, soon after the cyclone and during all of that heavy rain. It's a bull calf and he's the most beautiful little speckled red and white calf.
He's like quite the looker. I think there's a photo on our
you
website.
You can see a photo on the website there. They called the calf Billy. It's a bit of a shame it wasn't a girl calf because then they could have called it Debbie.
I bet there'll be a few Debbies that'll be popping up, I think, in the aftermath.
Probably.
What about take me further south to northern New South Wales? Where are things at?
Yeah, well, in northern New South Wales, they just copped so much rain and also those gale force winds. So it's also been a week there of just trying to count the cost of just what damage the widespread flooding has caused in that region. So many different industries were affected there. So the big dairy cooperative in the region, Norco, which has lots of farmers that supply them milk from northern New South Wales, they estimate that up to 30 of their farmers were impacted by significant flooding. They're offering a assistance to their farmers in some way because they're still going to pay suppliers that haven't been able to get their milk to the co-op. So that even though the trucks haven't been able to get to the farms to collect the milk, they're still paying for it, which is enormous for
really
the farmers.
Generous thing to
do, I guess, because it's so, worth so much money, each of their milk, supplies that they make. There's also soybean crops that were damaged, and cane farmers are still sort of wanting to find out what has happened for their crops there. There's also, it's a really big area for horticultural, particularly macadamia nuts, a lot growing in that region. So the Australian Macadamia Society expects that their national crop forecast will be affected because tons of that nut was washed away. And also, you talked before about, impact on other things we might not think of, particularly seafood, and it's expected to have a big impact on oyster production in that region. It could be weeks before the full extent of the damage to oysters is known. Birds Bay Oyster Farm in the Tweed Valley is yet to calculate their damage to not only stock losses but also infrastructure of the farm. The operations manager there, Matthew Eyre, says the amount of fresh water in the system could impact on the oysters.
Well, that's yet to be decided, okay, yet to be evaluated. It could permanently ruin the whole crop. We're not quite sure. We're hoping that's not the case.
And as I said, it's a region that's really varied and diversified in terms of what's grown there, including bananas. And we're starting to get a picture of just how much damage there's been to banana farms in the Brunswick and Tweed regions of northern New South Wales. They had massive soil loss because the storm dumped about 800 mils of rain, and it came just 2 weeks after they'd had another big rainfall event where there'd been sort of 300 to 500 mils of rain, so huge amounts of rain. Farmers there have already been doing it pretty tough because they've been getting really low prices for their bananas over the past sort of 12 to 18 months, and now they've got to deal with this storm damage. Matt Weinert is with the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries, and he says that some growers still haven't been able to get onto their properties, but initial reports suggest that crop losses are somewhere between 20 to 40%.
That's plants blown over with bags and bunches on. We've got one guy at Kujun that's probably lost about 6,000 out of 8,000 plants blown over. But the really major damage is we've had lots of landslips and lots of infrastructure damage with roads and those sorts of things.
800 millilitres of rain. As a rural reporter who seemed to be the kiss of drought for every region I covered, that's an incredible amount of rain. What about pecans? I heard some news about that as well.
Yeah, this is quite a nice story from a couple of farmers who were really wiped out back in 2013 when Cyclone Oswald hit that region of the north coast of New South Wales. This time around, they've also been affected by these big rains sort of from ex-tropical Cyclone Debbie, but they say that they are just so grateful that they haven't lost everything. I guess when you've sort of had the worst of it, anything, you know, less than that is seen as something of an improvement. So Jeff and Debbie Bugden, they have a farm at Richmond Hill, and Jeff says that the floodwaters have subsided now and he's been able to get out and inspect their orchard. And he thinks that they will be able to harvest some of their nuts.
As it turned out, we didn't get those gale force winds. Yeah, we got a bit of wind. We lost a bit of nut, but I estimate about 20%, but Deb's the brains of the business, and she thinks we've lost between 30 and 50% of the crop, but we'll survive. We'll make another year.
I remember talking to people who'd been through both flood and fire, and they said they would take fire any day, because while there was that deathly threat of fire, just the aftermath of flood is such a long process. Mm. Insurance is a nightmare. You've got to wait for everything to dry out and then get to it. So it's obviously going to be a long road back. We will hear some more of these stories a little later. Brett Worthington is my name. Kath McAloon is with us for a country breakfast here on RN. Kath, let's look at some of the other week's news. And barely a day goes by at the moment where you feel like ag tech and incubators and startups are all being mentioned in agriculture. Some more news this week on that front.
Yeah, this is quite an exciting deal that an Aussie agricultural technology company has signed up. Their technology is set to go global after they attracted millions of dollars in investment from international finance and manufacturing firms. So it's a Tasmanian startup called The Yield, and they've developed systems which use sensors, models, artificial intelligence and apps to help farmers make decisions based on data that's collected out in the field or for oyster farmers in waterways. And now they've attracted the attention of KPMG, Bosch and AgFunder, and those groups have put $6.5 million into this enterprise. Roz Harvey is the Managing Director of The Yield, and she says that these partnerships with these international companies means that it's now possible to take this Australian-developed innovation and commercialise it and take it to both Australian markets and overseas markets. So, as I mentioned, KPMG is one of the groups that's got on board. Their head of agri-technology, Ben Van Delden, says that this will result in what's a uniquely Australian innovation being marketed around the world.
I think that's one of Australia's advantages, is because we have such challenging growing conditions, technology that works here can pretty much work anywhere else in the world.
Good news for Tassie in that case. Let's head west to Western Australia. There's some sweet corn news that's popping up.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. You remember earlier in the year we were talking about the tomato potato psyllid, which had been found in some crops in WA, and that resulted in sort of really strict biosecurity regulations on the movement of some of the affected crops, which were potatoes and things like capsicums. But now Victoria and Tasmania have increased their biosecurity regulations to cover a much broader range of Western Australian crops. They're concerned that that psyllid, which is a little bug which can cause all sorts of damage, could be on other crops as well, like lettuces and herbs and some fruits like strawberries and apples, and also on corn. So they've introduced measures now that those also have to be fumigated before they can be allowed to come into their states. Now, this has been bad news for some of the Western Australian producers, where, you know, fumigation will either destroy the product, or if in the case of organic farming, you know, to fumigate it just means it's no longer an organic product, which is what Jim Trandos from Trandos Farms in WA is finding. He says his business has really taken a big hit.
The problem is the current compliance says that you need to fumigate with metal bromide. Clearly we can't do any of that on the organic product, so I completely lost my organic business overnight in New South Wales and Victoria.
Now, Kath, when I think of wheat production, I think of Australia, Canada, the US, I think the Black Sea, so Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand?
Yeah, they're more known for their sheep than or their dairy even. But
but now they've got a record.
They grow wheat crops and they grow bumper wheat crops, it would seem. They've set a new world record for the highest yielding wheat crop. It weighs in at 16.79 tonnes to the hectare. Now, you have spent a bit of time in wheat growing regions, Brett, so you'd know that...
You'd be rubbing your hands together if you could produce that.
It's pretty impressive. It's about 8 times higher than the average Australian crop, and it's just been certified by Guinness World Records. Eric Watson is the farmer in New Zealand who grew the crop, and he says despite it being a record setter, it's not being treated any differently now that it's been harvested.
It's just gone into a big heap in the shed with the rest of my feed wheat, and some of it will be delivered down to Five Star Beef, which is about 6 or 7K just down the road from us. So some of it's not even sold yet, so yeah, some of it is contracted down there, but it's just with a mix of all the other varieties pretty much.
No need to be sentimental about these things.
It's a record-breaking crop.
Yeah. Now, Kath, I'm a boy of the Mallee, but cannot stand snakes. The thought of this story just sends a shiver down my spine.
Yeah, customs authorities in Melbourne this week found more than fancy trainers when they checked a box which was marked shoes. So the Border Force officers were X-ray scanning international mail arrivals, and they discovered this parcel which was marked that it was shoes, but when they opened it up, they actually found that it was filled with live, venomous, exotic snakes and spiders. It
held
six vipers from Southeast Asia. There were 3 royal pythons, 9 large tarantulas. Now, that's what sort of gets my goat up the most. And also some scorpions, Asian forest scorpions. The snakes don't bother me too much, but the tarantulas and the scorpions.
Just horrible.
They're now investigating how who these smugglers were. And, they're not laughing about it, though, as much as it sort of is an interesting story. They say that it posed a risk of carrying pests and diseases to people, animals, plants, and, of course, agriculture if it was allowed into the country. And you can see a photo of all those creepy crawlies and slithery snakes on our website if you head to the rural homepage.
Oh, Kath, on that note, thank you.
Thanks,
I don't think I'll be able to forget it.
Cheers.